Happy holidays, Skeleton Crew. With your hosts, Rolando and Johnny. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Johnny.
And welcome to our annual Christmas special. The Skeleton Boys podcast presents A Bone for the Holidays, aka Dial Code for Santa. This year, we review Black Christmas.
So expect one every year, which means anally.
Anal. That's a threat. It's more of a threat every year.
Well, it depends on who you ask.
Yeah, we're going to desperately try not to find Killer Santa movies.
Yeah.
See how long that goes.
You know what? It is a threat. It's a threat for a good time.
Yo! As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts, and then we'll go to deep spoiler analysis. But first, hey, John, let's go. We're going to the short film corner.
Yay!
Yeah, that's... Cue music. No music. There.
Did you hear me walk over there?
Yeah, I did. You're like the little drummer boy. It was nice. All right. Now that we're relaxed and lounged, drinks in hand. This week, we are reviewing Crypt TV's Elf on the Shelf.
Elf on the Shelf. There you go. We got some music.
So when we were talking about this originally, you were saying, what is Elf on the Shelf? Why is what's going on with Elf on the Shelf?
Right. I was like, this is something that pops up every year. Like,
yeah. And I was like, it's like a new stupid Christmas tradition, probably the card companies made, right? What year did we narrow that down to?
Like, I forgot already.
The last like 15 years or so.
Probably sooner, too.
Something like that.
2005. There you go.
Yeah. 2005.
And it's a children's book.
Oh, my God. It's a children's book. Yeah, so.
Which, I mean, 2005, we were out of high school already, so we had no time for children's shenanigans.
No, we're adults doing adult stuff.
Getting drunk and desperately trying to get laid. Don't worry, yeah, people at home, stuff. We are still virgins.
I'm sure our audience loves that we're still right.
It's like, we're virgins. What should we talk about? Horror movies.
Christmas horror movies. Yeah. Fuck the holidays. The wonderful people at Crypt TV made Elf on the Shelf. Sort of a twist, a turn on it. And so I'm assuming without any... prior knowledge, Elf on the Shelf has something to do with wish fulfillment. I have no idea what the story or short story originally on, because in our short, that seems to be what the son is trying to do to his very young mother. is that the general idea?
I guess it says, the Elf on the Shelf is also Santa's best friend. I guess elves hide in our homes to oversee events, which is like creepy.
Yeah, that's horrible.
They play ongoing games of hide and seek. I'm like, I don't like any of this so far. I'm not going to read any more of it. It's like that gnome show that, remember, like, you're supposed to love these gnomes that help people out. And there's that one episode everybody remembers where, like, this dude was super poor. So one of the gnomes put a gold bar in his shoe and nobody believed him. And they were like trying to, like, I don't know if arrest is the right word, because this is like a period piece. No, you know what I'm talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about. Sorry.
It was like real dramatic as the last episode of the series, like the gnome and his, like, the two gnomes, this couple, they're like already old. They went to like the top of this hill because they knew it was their time to go away and pass on. It was like bizarre for a children's show. Like, oh, we love each other, and they did this thing where they did like Eskimo kisses. I guess is that bad to say? I haven't looked up if Eskimo kisses is
what do you mean?
Offensive or not? Yeah,
PC term.
And it's just snuggling some noses.
Well,
so these gnomes snuggle some noses, and then they slowly just disappear into the wind. Okay.
Yeah. Oh my god. Yes, I think I know what you're talking about.
I think it's a show that went off the air like in the late 90s or something. And oh, then god. That brings me to Elf.
And that was our review.
What's there to say? Let's see how quickly I can get through this. Kid is being babysat. Kid is upset that he has to go to sleep early. Says, I wish you were real, Elf, and I wish they were dead, or something like that. And the elf becomes a full-grown, like, man, or maybe even bigger, grabs a candy cane, and just stabs him to death, I guess, like the babysitter and the babysitter's boyfriend. That's it.
Yeah, that's
so
it.
It's
not really a short, it's like a trailer, or like a proof of concept for
that's
something
what, yeah, it feels
else,
like that.
Right?
But then, like, according to like the little plot summary for the book, I guess that's kind of what it does. So, but wouldn't that make the kid naughty for wishing for something like that?
I guess maybe that was an evil elf on the shelf, a naughty elf on the shelf.
And like, did this elf have like salivary glands or something? Because how else did it whittle the candy cane into a point without like breaking it or it opening and crumbling into a billion pieces? I got questions.
I don't know.
Not enough answers.
Good questions, actually. Well, I don't know. How would it? I missed where it whittled it to a knife. So does the elf on the shelf come with the candy cane? Is that like a thing, or is just something it fashioned?
Because this little elf on the shelf kind of looked like almost like those little the monitos, the little toys you put on your drink. You know what I'm talking about?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know. I have no clue.
Yeah. Did you like it?
I mean, it was okay. I think I was telling you that I probably saw it like 3 times because I kept forgetting that I saw it. I was like, oh, shit, I gotta watch the short. But I kept forgetting because it's like 2 minutes long.
It's really fast, yeah.
So there's nothing to really complain about. Like,
that's true.
Like, straight to the point.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing I didn't dislike. So in it, everything, you know, made sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I don't know. Elf
on the Shelf.
Elf on the Shelf. And that's our review. Thank you, Crypt TV.
I think our review was longer than the short.
Yeah, I think so.
Of Elf on the Shelf. You were telling me that the Crypt TV people produce a lot of like horror shorts.
Yes,
for YouTube, I think.
Mostly YouTube stuff. They have, it's definitely them. They have like a series of like monsters they've made up, which are kind of fun. Very kind of same vein of like the Insidious series where it has like different, you know, kind of bad guy characters.
Oh, okay. On. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, like there's one where this thing that doesn't have eyes and it's real fucking scary looking, like tests a person no matter where they're at, and they have to give up what they did wrong or something like that. And if they don't do it, then this thing like just brutally murders them.
Hmm.
That's pretty cool.
That's cool. Yeah. I've never seen anything by Crypt TV. This is the first thing I've ever seen from them. I liked it. I thought the, you know, easy to wrap my head around concept, executed finely. I, you know, didn't have any issues with the acting or the production design. Everything seemed cool, holiday-ish.
Yeah.
So, it's too fast, maybe. I would have liked maybe a little more of a story. That, like I said, I thought it just seemed like a trailer for something, like a quick, like, here, this is the movie I want to make, like a quick, you know, video, your proof of concept of what it is that we can expand on as in a movie. But
it also
that was the main
looks
thing.
Like maybe they're like, hey, we got this idea. We have like a day to shoot it because it kind of looked like a set, right?
Yeah, didn't look like a home per se.
I mean, like I believed it was a home, but it was also like, oh, this could have just been like a three wall set or something because they're only shooting one corner.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So, I mean, I guess if I had that at my disposal, but like, what can we shoot real quick? I'm like, Elf on a Shelf. I'm pretty sure that's what somebody did. Look at these memes that we keep sending each other of Elf on a Shelf. Somebody's like, check it out. Mandalorian on a DeLorean.
Genius. All right. Excellent. That was a little holiday treat for you. Definitely check it out then. Elf on the Shelf.
Yeah, check it out. You got 2 minutes to spare and you're bored. You might as well watch it.
Yeah, I don't know if you would add it to your like Christmas rotation, just like between a very Charlie Brown Christmas and Elf, just sticking Elf in the Shelf.
When when you're stuck on the 405 and you got like 2 minutes to fucking kill.
That's awfully revealing. About you, John.
You can watch.
Did you watch this while you were sitting in traffic?
Approximately 12 times if you're on the 405 just waiting to move. No.
Excellent. All right. Elf on the Shelf.
All right. Merry Christmas.
All right. Let's go to our main review of Black Christmas, John.
Black Christmas.
There it is. John,
I thought it was going to be said like that. It's like,
Black John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
Yes. Full disclosure, guys, it's been a very busy week, so we'll see how well these turn out. For Johnny's Black Christmas. Plot summary. Jingle bells. Deck my balls.
What? That's not a plot summary.
It's my little jingle for this. Coming in at number 3, I have naughty college kids get stabbed. In parentheses, not a porn.
That's accurate. Yeah.
It's got all the makings. It's got all the makings of a porno.
Coming in at number 2, Michael Myers' best friend.
Which there's a lot to say about that too, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And coming in at number 1, Superman takes his sweet time. You just let Lois
get fucking wasted. Damn, that one went over my head. That's a good one.
Nice. Oh man, there's several, man.
That was good, yeah.
This movie's chock full of weird before they were famous Easter eggs.
So like one of them I didn't realize, but the boyfriend, the really artistic boyfriend, was the guy from 2001. Yeah. I was like, holy shit. Yeah. I was
can't
like
allow you do that, Dave.
He's kind of bad in this movie.
He's a little bit bad. definitely.
He's definitely like acting. He's going for it. He's like, I didn't recognize it because he has fucking long hair too. He has like fucking long hair. He's like super arty.
Yeah, I was gonna say. I feel like it does play into what they're trying to do. I think for the overall plot line,
right.
Yeah, but Margot Kidder, I think, and John Saxon definitely stole the show.
Oh yeah, John Saxon's so good. Holy shit, I can see why he's eventually going to be the cop in what is it, Nightmare on Elm Street, right?
Yeah,
like he's the dad or whatever.
And then Margot Kidder was like fucking hilarious,
dude. I feel like knowing a little bit about Margot Kidder and her, like, you know, as an actress, not as a performer, like that's. Apparently that's who she is, right?
Yeah.
Like, she was, you know, kind of wild, kind of drank a lot, probably did too many drugs. you know, in the 90s, suffered, it had like a mental breakdown in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, she was always drunk on the Superman set, apparently.
And apparently she was always drunk on this one. She insisted on acting with real alcohol. I was reading some trivia this morning, and I was like, oh, that made sense. She's funny, though. She's super good. She's so charismatic. Complete opposite of Lois Lane, you know? What you expect from her.
And I just love, from the guy that brought you A Christmas Story.
Oh, yeah.
And baby geniuses.
Super baby geniuses. To be.
Oh, man. And then Porky's and Porky's 2. We got Black Christmas. The movie that inspired John Carpenter to make Halloween.
Yeah, like Bob Clark had a fucking career, man. This guy made a Christmas, like two Christmas classics, right? A cult classic and then A Christmas Story, and Black Christmas is considered a cult classic.
Completely and then, opposite ends
a Christmas
of the
Story, which is
track.
Holiday tradition, you know what I mean? Like just a movie that's constantly played throughout the season, you know, and it's still played regularly on cable,
all day. All the time. I mean, they might start playing it soon. It's like the original Mariah Carey's song.
You know, there's certain things you expect. A Christmas Story, Mariah Carey, right? Those are just holiday staples every damn year.
You want to hear some trivia about this film? Because, like, it's just like the more I was researching it, the more I was like, what the fuck? So Carpenter asked Clark, like, hey, are you planning to make a sequel? And Clark was like, you know, no, like, I'm fucking done with this. Like, I'm done making horror movies, basically, is what he said. And he goes like, oh, man, come on. Like, what would you have done if you're going to do a sequel? He's like, no. And then finally Clark gave in and said, well, the idea is the killer gets caught. And then years later, he escapes from the mental institution he's at. And it's Halloween. And the movie was going to be called Halloween. I mean, according to like the story idea and all that, Carpenter's thing is it's like its own thing and like in its own right, you know, whatever. But yeah, that's where it kind of gave the idea.
That's awesome. I love that. I love it. Yeah, because this is like for Black Christmas is kind of like it's considered the prototype slasher movie, right? Like it's considered one of the first slasher holiday theme. Well, probably the first holiday theme. I'm gonna say slasher movie. Which
I would say
spawned countless imitators. Yeah, after.
And kind of the first time you get that. I know. Sorry, my phone just went off.
How dare you?
I need to get my news alerts. I think it's like the first like slasher movie that had like a real psychological sort of angle to it, you know, which I thought was interesting. Like, because. I tell you right now, I really enjoyed this movie. Even though like I didn't really get to sit down and watch it, I was like, holy shit, how am I like barely watching this? I'm very disappointed in myself.
So same. I actually really would like this movie. When we were talking about what we were gonna review, I was like, I saw this movie. Let's just watch it again. It's classic. Upon watching it now, I don't think this is the version I saw. I must have been thinking of another holiday movie, themed movie with the Killer Santa, because I thought, oh, this is the Killer Santa movie.
No
Killer Santa.
We actually reviewed a non-Killer Santa fucking Christmas movie.
We did it. What were a year. We escaped the Killer Santa movie. And so I was like, upon watching it, I was actually sat down to actually see it. I was like pleasantly surprised that this movie is clearly, this is where a lot of the tropes start, right? Like, group of women are victimized in their sorority and they're being stalked by a killer, right?
And
they have we were joking about it before we started recording about how like the phone the call is coming within the house. This is the classic.
When a stranger calls with Carol Kane, I feel like all these movies start to connect with all these actors.
It was just really like honestly, I would say this is less a slasher movie, more of a psychological horror and it's not even violent. There's not even like anything that I would say is quasi questionable or, you know, in modern context would seem to be inappropriate. Yeah. Maybe, you know what
so
I mean?
They,
like,
they asked Clark about that, and he said that he ultimately decided that not seeing the actual impact or like the more graphic part was scarier in his head at the time.
No, yeah. And it works. It works. Jaws, it completely right? works.
It's got that sort of thing going on. Don't look
honestly,
at
this is yeah, no, exactly. It has that same mentality, right? Of a Jaws, like less is more. And this movie does a really good job of portraying the women like being feeling like they're trapped and essentially like a community that doesn't believe them. You know, that they're kind of
the
like
cops are fucking useless.
All victims. Yeah. The cops are chauvinist
until John
assholes,
Saxon comes
right?
In
they're
and
just
saves
so
the day.
Yeah. And yeah, no, it's just sort of they have like you know, adults have this prejudice against younger people that they think younger people are dumb and they're kind of just horny and they just want to just, you know, are more problematic than
which
they are.
Which could not be absolutely more true, but with that said, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
there's
no.
still people.
It's just like there's so many things that this movie is like lightning in a bottle, kind of like movie where everything just sort of clicks, matches up. Sort of like, I don't know, like even like Ghostbusters, right? Like that's it. That came out. And everyone's like, Ghostbusters is one of those movies that is just perfect, right? Has the perfect comedians of its time.
Yeah.
They're all funny. They have like weird kind of science fiction, ghost hunting stuff in it, paranormal stuff that just was able to click and just, you know, capture the mainstream audience. And there's just so many like imitators from it. And I feel like Black Christmas is sort of the same genesis of a
I'll agree with
type
that,
of movie.
What I won't agree with, unfortunately, even though I love Ghostbusters, I was actually talking about this with a couple of friends and we were saying basically like, I think people really put that movie on a pedestal because of what it was, you know? But even when I rewatch it, mm-hmm. I'm like, damn, yeah, they're all hilarious. And Bill Murray, like, improvising is really funny, but half of what he's saying makes no fucking sense.
It's all his charisma. It's always been Bill Murray's charisma that carries him through most of those movies. Like, the stuff he made with Harold Ramis was just like so improvised and just they would just come up with very silly simple storylines, right? Like, oh, you're a camp counselor, or you know, you're in the army, or you know, you're a paranormal hunter, right? Like, and just let these guys do
We're
whatever
gonna throw
it is,
a
you know,
candy bar in the swimming pool, and the whole joke is people think it's cool and then you're gonna fish it out and eat it.
Gold captures that joke captures people's hearts and minds back in the day. You have no idea.
I started just opening up Snicker bars and throwing them in swimming pools because I enjoyed it so much.
Of course, right?
Are we ready for another trivia?
And hit me with trivia. Yeah.
So Olivia Hussey, famous for Romeo and Juliet, the original, mm-hmm. right? Back in like mm-hmm. the '60s, was meeting with the producers for a movie called Roxanne, which we all know is Steve Martin's adaptation of Cyrano de Bergerac.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Martin like walked in and sat down to talk to her like, hey, you are in one of my all-time favorite movies. And she automatically assumed Romeo and Juliet, which would have fit in line with what Cyrano de Bergerac was, right?
Right.
And apparently Steve Martin was like, Black Christmas is just like my all-time favorite movie. So
nice.
She was like, wait, what?
I mean, that's a really comforting thought. Steve Martin watching Black Christmas. that's just the thought of him watching Black Christmas is just perfect. I loved it. That completely makes sense. Yes. Yeah. This movie really took me by surprise. Like all of the and it feels like I was watching it for the first time, you know, like it's kind of dumb, it's kind of goofy, you know, some of the characters, you know, it goes through kind of silly comedy.
Yeah.
But I feel like when the moments get serious and when the scares, the horror is taken serious enough and the resolution actually took me by surprise too, like the ending of this movie took me by surprise. I was like, man, they really went.
I don't think there is like, a resolution.
They went like super arty, like very like bold, you know, balls out, decision how to end the movie. I was pleasantly surprised. Like this, and this film almost felt like it was European inspired. I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, I can see that. Which when we get to talking about the ending, I'm gonna guess neither of us actually understood the ending the first time, or like when we were like watching it for the first time.
I'm interpreting it a certain way, but I also think that it's loosely interpreted. I think that was kind of what the director was going for, right? Something ambiguous.
A little bit ambiguous, but he did reveal, I guess, a little bit later, a little tidbit that kind of explains a little more.
Right. Yeah.
So when you rewatch it and you hear all the voices, like things start to piece together more.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Oh, also that, and I'm already going to spoil something. They killed the love of my life in the movie, Phyllis.
Yeah.
The young lady with the fro.
The fro, yeah.
I was
yeah.
like, oh my God, I'm in love with her. And then I look up who she is, and she is the aunt from My Big Fat Greek Wedding that says, "You don't eat no meat. Okay, I make lamb." Oh. It's the same actress.
Oh, yeah. Really? Holy shit.
Yeah, I was like, this is awesome.
Oh, crap. Let me look that up.
So I still have a chance with her.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if you read up on this, too. But when they were going to release this movie, it was going to be released like primetime NBC.
Mm-hmm.
But a string of murders were happening around Florida State University. But like these two female students got murdered, and then a bunch of people got attacked outside. So they were able to successfully pull the movie from being released. And then they released it later that year. It was like a midnight feature. And then after all that's said and done, they find out that it was Ted Bundy that killed those people. So Ted Bundy
delayed
the release of this film.
This movie, the whole... man, I saw a really good... Did you see that documentary on HBO? The one Pat Oswalt's wife? The one that passed away?
Oh, no.
It's about her, you know, being popular in that true crime investigation, and she hunts down the San Francisco killer. And that's partly... Those crimes partly inspired... the Zodiac killing, partly was connected to it. And there's just this, they cover an interesting topic that about society at the time, about how like this time during the 70s, women were, it was sort of like going out, getting jobs, and the society, it was kind of like all of these like male masculinity was like trying to like stop them from progressing in society. And so a lot of them were like, a lot of cops were would ask women like, well, what were you wearing? Why would you wear that? They would have like these poor practices, and they didn't believe the women that they were investigating. So there were just like the spring of crimes where a lot of stuff didn't happen at the time. So a lot of stuff wasn't reported. And that's, I feel like a lot of that ties the rise of Ted Bundy, the rise of, the Zodiac killer, the rise of the Golden State killer, stuff like that is a reaction to women, you know, wanting more than what they were had at the society, right? The way they were viewed, right? Stay at home.
Like this movie's kind of like, it's very feminist forward for the year it came out too.
Exactly.
I had to look up what year. So this movie came out in 1974, right?
Yeah.
Roe versus Wade happened in 1973. So this movie was, they still made it this way, even though the Supreme Court decision was made.
That's kind of like crazy to think that Roe, as far as I've been alive, Roe versus Wade has always been around, even though it might not be around much longer. But Roe versus Wade has been around. So to think that in 1973, it became law, right? And how culturally that must have been a lightning rod of changes, right?
Yeah.
And it's really kind of daring that, of course, our main character, Jess, she ends up being pregnant and she wants an abortion. She doesn't want to, she doesn't want to keep it with Peter, which is like probably incredibly progressive for the time.
Yeah, and he's obviously not a good dude. He's a little off his rocker.
What did they say? Like, no, how did she describe him?
I don't remember. But yeah, he was just like...
He's very showy. He's arty or something like that.
Well, like he like failed some fucking audition for that contemporary music school. He's going... Not contemporary. What am I thinking of?
He had a recital or some shit,
and he
was like,
he wanted to be a concert pianist and he fucked up. So he got a mic stand and destroyed the piano. And I'm like, what kind of overprivileged rich white person does that?
There's a lot of like things like that that just...
And he's like, no, we're keeping the baby. And then when she's like, no, you can't tell me what to do. You know, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. And then he comes back later like, I've quit the school. We're going to get married. I'm doing this for you. Let's have the baby. And she's like, no.
What I loved about that scene was she calmly, rationally explained that, you know, that, you know, I don't... Just because you threw away... You know, your future is not working out doesn't mean that my future is going to change. You know, I still have plans and goals that are separate, have nothing to do with you, which is like so radical for the movie. I was like, dude, this is great. She's not, you know, submissive. She's calmly explaining to this guy who's immature and, like you say, privileged and probably a little crazy, a little arty, you know, that, hey, no, this is not, you know, I'm not going to be held to those standards, which was, you know, actually pretty cool.
What if this is what happened, right? At the end of 2001 Space Odyssey, now he's just living different lives via quantum leap style, right?
This is what he saw in his bed with the monolith and shit.
Yeah, he's actually talking to Ziggy. It's just like, they can't show that, right?
Yeah. No, yeah, man. It's even like, I don't know, I just really liked... even Margot Kidder's character, like, I thought Margot Kidder was the main star for some reason, because I guess they opened with her, and I was like, oh, it's fucking Margot Kidder. She's fucking great in this, and she fades away, right?
And she's the one that has the first conversation with the killer you see on screen, you know, where, like, he's, like, saying all that fucked up shit, like, I want it, like, what, like, some... It's like, I want to taste your pretty little cunt. I'm like, geez, dude. Like, even by today's standards, I'd be like, fucking hell.
Yeah,
she's like, oh gross, why don't you... what did she say? She said something that wasn't as offensive, but it was still pretty good.
No, yeah, it was even those things. I mean, again, like, for a movie set in the 70s to show that women are preyed upon and women are fetishized like this by men,
right?
Even that one scene where those guys show up at her door and the window, and they're kind of being a little pervy. They were like the neighborhood watch. They were like walking. Yeah. I was like, this scene is like, that must be terrifying for the women. If I put myself in their shoes, like, that must be terrifying for them. Like, you have these fucking weird men with guns in the middle of the night, you know, showing up at my door, telling me, oh, we're here to protect you and stuff. Like, just thinking and putting myself in their shoes, it's like, man, this fucking sucks, you know? Like, we're just being a young woman in this community is horrible. It's terrifying. You know, he's got all these pervy men who think they have, like, some chance with them.
Yeah.
You know, or they're fulfilling some shitty fantasy of theirs.
100% agree. One of the biggest, I think, fuck-ups on their end, like, the sorority's end is... for the love of God, please lock your fucking windows and doors. Right? It wasn't until the end of the movie, like, oh, hey, you... Oh, it was those two pervy men. They're like, hey, you realize, like, none of your windows or doors are locked. They're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, damn. Everyone else is... everybody else is dead. It's just the two of us, Phyllis. Oh, well. Guess we better lock the windows and doors.
You know, it's funny because I grew up not locking my door. Oh. Like, I never had to because I lived out in the fucking... boonies. I lived in the middle of fucking nowhere. My nearest neighbor was like 2 acres, 3-4 acres away.
Nice.
You know what I mean? Like, and there was like rows of cows between them. So we never locked our door. There was no, like, if anybody rolled up on our house looking to start some shit, they would be terrified of our house. It was like, this is dark. There's no lights. There's no streets. There's like all the fucking giant dark ass yard. Nobody would rob us. So we had no, there's no reason for us to ever lock our doors.
And just so everybody knows, Rolando's the shortest person in his family, and he is 6'2".
Yeah.
Wait, 6'3"? No, 6'2".
6'3", yeah. So, but no, I don't know. Is that a thing for you? You grew up locking doors, windows?
Well, where I was at was the boonies for a while, and then a bunch of people moved in, and then there was like a string of robberies. So, yeah, we started locking our doors and stuff.
Yeah.
Even though, terrible story. Should I say it? Should I say a terrible story about me? I got way too drunk outside of my house one time, and when I went back inside, I totally forgot to close the door. This is like me just like outside, you know, because we could go outside and sit down and look at the stars and not here. I would never fucking do that here, but
no, what stars? Movie stars? It's like some C-list celebrity in your neighborhood. You're gonna go peep on them, or
those
what?
those movie stars burned out a long time ago.
I mean, I used to break into my house all the time because all the windows were open. Like, if I would skip school and, like, if I needed to get in the house, I'd be like, oh, okay, just pop in the window and just jimmy myself in. Yeah.
Another terrible story is I would forget my house key all the time. So I just had, like, I think at this point it was, like, an old Blockbuster card or, like, a Hollywood Video card, and just break into my house all the time.
Yeah. Do you want to get into spoilers? You want to walk me through this ending?
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers. Yeah, so I got to say, for the type of movie it is, it's got an impressively high body count, you know?
Yeah.
Because pretty much everyone, with the exception of our lead, dies in that house. Like, everyone like is staying in that house dies. So what happens? What's his name? Jimmy or something in the movie? Peter. His name is Peter.
Peter, yeah.
Right. And then what are they killing? What are they killing? What are they calling the slasher guy, like Willie Billy. Or something like that?
Billy. Yeah, Billy.
Mm-hmm. How am I phonetically off on all these things right now? Okay, so Billy and Peter, right? Both nicknames for dicks. Just kidding. It all connects.
Spoiler! It all connects.
No, but it doesn't. That's the tricky part. So,
tricky dicky, yeah.
We're assuming Peter is a killer this whole time because like all the dots are finally connecting. You know, he's like a little crazy. He can't seem to like let go of his now ex girlfriend. I don't think he understands they broke up, really. And then, like he's like sneaking around outside the house, and people are getting killed outside of the house now, including a cop. Because for a second, I was like, "Oh, poor guy, squirted a ketchup on his neck by accident." So we assume it's him, but then at the end, after everyone has been killed, which I think the one person that got the most graphic death was probably
characters. Probably the first one. No, that she got suffocated with the bag,
and
they kept cutting back to it like over and over again.
I mean,
like,
our killer goes crazy and starts like doing the voices again and like rocks the chair that she's in up in the attic. Because nobody ever goes to the attic. Up. Not even at the end of the movie.
Biggest plot hole of the movie. Maybe the one thing I did not like was the cops didn't go into the basement.
Their caretaker woman, the head of the house, whatever she is, she gets that one. I thought was funny. Like, he like throws a big like hook at her neck, and it like lodges in her throat, and she just kind of hangs there. But I was gonna say, I thought Margot Kidder's death was pretty fucked up. Like, she had a glass ornament, like a bunch of glass ornaments, and there was like a unicorn that had like an absurdly long horn with a sharp tip. And he just goes to town stabbing her to death.
Yeah, but it's done kind of arty, right? Like, it's done like cut and back and forth and music raising and like,
because
it was done kind of
Our lead goes outside, gets distracted, by a group of carolers. So it keeps cutting back to the carolers reacting to the carolers. And so I think our first clue into what's really going on is when Peter finally sneaks into the house. He's for some reason looking through like a peephole, right? I'm going to forget what Olivia's name, Jess. The Jess character comes by and sees her. And when he looks through the peephole, his eyes go wide like he's in shock or afraid. And she freaks out too and like slams the door in his hand, right? And then she runs away. Mm-hmm. And then he like breaks into the basement and tries to find her. And then that's about the extent of what you get for the ending, right? Because she goes like catatonic and then like passes out again, keeps passing out, doesn't talk. And then you get this weird like tracking shot going back up to the attic when you overhear like a cop talking about, you want to check the attic? He's like, no, our hospitals are overrun right now. And also we should just let the feds deal with that because they're coming or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then when that's happening, all of a sudden you start hearing the voices again. And then you start seeing things rock and move and stuff like that in the attic. So Peter was not our killer after all.
Yeah.
Billy, with the information Bob Clark gave later, is Jess's brother.
Oh.
And that house might have been where he lived before she was around.
Hmm. Jess's brother.
And then I think that's why, like, when I was watching like a mini like recap of the movie, every time he does the different voices, you start to get a little more information about what might have happened to him. It might have been like a sexual assault thing, and it might have been like he killed his entire family except for her, which kind of leads into another movie again, doesn't it?
Yep. Yeah. I remember when we were watching the Halloween series, I remember Carpenter saying that he wanted to make them brother and sister because of Star Wars. Wasn't that the producers wanted that, or he wanted that, or something along those lines?
Oh, so another person not giving Kurosawa credit? Interesting.
Yeah. You know what I thought? That the caretaker lady, she offhandedly mentions, and I thought this was a breadcrumb, but I don't think it ends up leading anywhere. Because the killer is like, we never really see killer. We never really see him. We just see like hands, eyes, arms, and shit like that. But I thought she casually mentions that the house is falling apart and the repairman never comes, Mr. Randall, something like that, right? And I thought, oh, it's Mr. Randall, because Randall would know the house the best. Because it kind of seemed like this guy knew the house and he knew where to hide, he knew where to put stuff, he knew it instinctively, you know, like he knew it before anybody. So I thought that was the breadcrumb leading to that reveal.
Yeah.
And of course, it ends with the movie ends with her asleep and in the house again, and everybody goes away thinking it's over because they thought Peter was the killer. They've decided Peter was the killer. Yeah. And then it slowly like goes into the house, like you had mentioned. It goes into the attic and you start hearing things, and then they pull out all the way out. And then it has, you start hearing the phone again, which is like the biggest thing, was like the caller kept calling them and calling them. And that's where I thought they were heading with. That to me was ended up not meaning anything.
but could have been like a prequel to any of these fucking movies, including A Stranger Calls, right? Like it's all, we talked about it a little bit beforehand, but I thought the funniest fucking part was, which, by the way, in my head, at like after that moment, I was like, "Just deserves to die." Like, it's so stupid. this cop like calls her, and they're like, "Just don't tell her that what we know. Just make sure to she locks the doors in a safe." But then Jess keeps pushing it, and for some reason, this cop is like, "All right, I'll tell you. The call's coming from inside the house. Lock your doors. Don't go upstairs. Don't do it." She's like, "What? You want me to go upstairs?" No, she doesn't say that, but that's what it felt like. Okay, I'll go upstairs. It's like, don't do it. Don't go upstairs for the love of God. Don't do it. He's like going off on the phone. And it's like such a weird, gradual pace that this actress decides to do. He's like real calm and then like, nah, don't do it. It's coming from inside the house. She's like, okay, I guess I better go check to see what's upstairs.
She kept calling out, Barb? Barb? Phyllis!
No, they're all dead.
Yeah. That's yeah, I don't know, man. That scene does not work anymore. But
a bunch of male actors really trying to outshine each other, and then he got John Saxon come in like, hey, what's up?
He's cool. He's the cool detective, yeah. Yeah, no. And I thought this movie, it plays so the very, very end, because I almost didn't want to interpret it as sort of a surrealistic moment, yeah. Right? Interpretive, that murderers are on the loose. They're always going to terrorize women, call them, harass them. Because just the way it was played, right? And one of the strengths, I think, in this movie, there's not like a continuing soundtrack in this movie. There's a lot of the scenes are played quiet, right? Like, which I think adds to the building of the tension throughout the movie. And it was expertly done as an excellent choice at the end where you're just pulling out, you hear a random dog barking, and then you just start hearing the phone calls, and the phone calls plays and plays over the credits and stuff. And
that was cool.
I think it really hammers home that, like, it hammers home that, no, the quote-unquote evil is not gone. It's nothing's resolved. I think that played really well. I think that worked really effective for an ending. So,
but I think it's better that it's like all these things are left ambiguous. But I still wanted to see what happened between Jess and Peter. Like, did Jess actually kill Peter, or did like the Billy character like fucking murder the dude and then keep her alive?
Yeah, because they don't really reveal how Peter was murdered. Because if they were to say, oh, he died of the... Because Jess was carrying around one of those like fire pokers. And Peter, if they had said like, oh, Peter died from, you know, wounds from the fire poker, then that would have tracked, right? And she would have passed out. But it's left to where... No, they didn't. And this guy only seems to be interested in killing women, right? He only killed... all the women in this movie, so.
Oh, no, that's not true. He killed that cop.
Oh, he killed the cop. Yeah. That's true.
And then I'm assuming, my assumption is he killed Peter. That's my guess.
Yeah, I think so. Because
they mentioned, like, man, I didn't know Jess was capable of that. And it's like, I don't know. She doesn't, the whole movie suggests she wouldn't.
She wouldn't, yeah. She wouldn't have been able to do it.
She already kind of lied about.
Yeah.
I guess he kind of mentioned something about us kind of like just ripping off a wart. And then she kind of heard like that being said through the many voices Billy was doing over the phone, which is like one of the first like red herrings where it's like, oh fuck, it's Peter. But I mean, it very well could have been like he overheard him saying that. I mean, even after she heard that, it wasn't like she called the cops immediately to try to get rid of him. It was like she really wanted to help.
Yeah. She wasn't totally convinced that it was Peter. I think the cops kind of talked her into it. That it convinced her that Peter was the most likely suspect, likely killer out of everybody.
But it's never who you think it is.
No, yeah. Never.
And before we wrap this up, I just got to say the most juvenile Mel joke they could have come up with, and it was delivered perfectly by... was it? Yeah, Margot Kidder, I think, did the joke right about the fellatio thing and that...
Fellatio, like,
tight-knit, like, cop or whatever didn't know what that meant, which I thought was weird. He's like, oh, it's something dirty, isn't it? I was like, fellatio is like a fucking, like a proper term. It's not like a slang
that was
word.
Funny. Yeah. That was good. I don't know if I believe that the cop wouldn't know what that means, though. it was weird, but I get why it was there. It was funny. The cop's laughter was funny because it looked like when the cop was laughing at him for not knowing, John Saxon started laughing, and it looked like a genuine laugh from John Saxon.
The other cop laughing.
Like, he genuinely looked like he was
laughing,
cracking up.
It looked like they had done this take several times, and he was like running out of air and energy.
That's what I like that scene because it looked like genuine Saxon just cracking in the camera. And stuff like that. I don't know. It worked. It was good. Do you have any last thoughts?
No, I think I'll probably rewatch this one.
I thought it was excellent too.
Several times.
All right. Really John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give?
do that. Just rate the movie.
For Black Christmas. Black Christmas. Johnny's going to give it 8.9 sexy spooky bones.
I'm going to give it, I'll give it 9. I almost want to give it 10, the full 10, but 9. I want to save 10 for, I'm keep wanting to save 10 for that special movie, because that's the benchmark, right? That's the movie we will measure every movie
from here on out.
And though I found a lot to like about this movie, I don't think it was perfect. I don't want to give it the perfect 10 bones.
Well, like, it's
so
funny to think I'm gonna give it Lifetime allowed graphic natured movies, like this would be like their first horror Lifetime.
Oh my god, they did a perfect Lifetime movie. It's all
it's
there.
Basically there.
Oh, that's perfect. I love it. All right, I'm gonna give it 9 sexy spooky bones. So again, that wraps up our annual Christmas special. Another Christmas in the can, John.
Another Christmas staying in the can. Because I do this podcast on the toilet.
Yeah, you do. You insist on video. all right, guys and gals and non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always...
Ho, ho, ho. Stay spooky.
Skeleton crew, it's time. The boys say goodbye. We love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to...